Conclusion: Unity and Diversity. This Dhamma is for one with Samadhi, not for one without Samadhi. So it was said. For what reason was this said? Here a monk enters and abides in the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. The Buddha, Anguttara Nikaya 8:30. The Buddha never divided the themes of meditation into two classes, samatha and vipassana. Nor did he divide meditators into two classes, the samatha practitioners and the vipassana practitioners. He taught the development of the mind for the ending of suffering. As mind is diverse, so too are the means of development diverse. But if we freeze these different means into different paths, we fracture the organic unity of the Dhamma. Some may walk to the left, some to the right, some faster, some slower, some with ease, some with difficulty. But the path itself is one. This eightfold path is the only path. There is no other for the purification of vision. Dhammapada 274. I am well aware that by insisting that jhanas are necessary for liberation, I court the risk of being labeled intolerant. Many, rightly wary of the specter of religious fanaticism, seek common ground between religions or between branches of the same religion by claiming that surface differences, arising as valid responses to the circumstances of time and place, mask an underlying unity. I believe this is mistaken. Certainly, the Buddha flat out denied that his teaching was the same as any other. While many differences do indeed float only on the surface, in my opinion, an honest appraisal shows that, among many similarities, some meaningful differences persist, even in the deep structures of religions, in their philosophies, in the experiences of their sages, and in the sayings of their founders. But, of course, non-identity does not mean complete separation or contradiction. It means distinct but related. Anyway, mere tolerance is a stingy virtue. We should do more than tolerate. We should celebrate goodness wherever we find it. We should rejoice in whatever peace, wisdom, and fulfillment any spiritual practitioner finds in their chosen way. We should be happy to live together, talk together, and practice together in a spirit of mutual respect, mutual harmony, and mutual support, even if we have differing views or practices. Saying, we should get along with them because in the end they're the same as us, is perhaps the most intolerant view of all. We value others because they measure up to our standard. But we should value others because of their intrinsic worth, because they measure up to their own standard. More importantly, one treats the truth shabbily. Truth is one, and does not bow to the whims of fashion. Here, surely, all would agree. The rich diversity of religious and philosophical doctrines in the world are attempts to represent that truth. The view that it's all the same in the end is just one more view. But it is a view perilously intolerant of reasoned inquiry. Declaring sensitive issues out of bounds for fear of disputes is the surest way to sap religion's vitality, relegating it to stagnation and irrelevance. A reasoned, thoughtful critique grants those views the dignity of attention, and it grants the adherents of those views the dignity of taking part in such an inquiry. Investigation can distinguish between trivial and important differences of opinion and clear the way for meaningful reconciliation. Disputes about livelihood or the code of conduct are trifling, Ananda. But should disputes arise in the Sangha about the path or the way of practice, the 37 wings of enlightenment, they would be for the harm and misfortune of many. Majjhima Nikaya 104:5. Only this is right. Everything else is stupid. This is one extreme view. It's all the same in the end. This is a second extreme view. The Buddha taught us to avoid these extremes through analysis and inquiry. What is the same? What is different? In all the deserts on this broad earth, there are not even two grains of sand that are completely identical. Still less are there two grains of sand that are utterly different. The true basis of compassion and respect is not a supposed identity of beliefs or paths, but our shared nature as sentient beings. We all feel pain. We are together in this lifeboat earth, drifting on the trackless seas, longing for a glimpse of land. As we share our sorrows, so too we share our joys. And of all joys, none compares with the joy of letting go. This joy belongs to no one, lives in no country. It is not Buddhist and was not invented by the Buddha. Jhana is not a difficulty or a problem we should fear. It is a promise that the spiritual life leads to an astonishing pleasure. One should know how to define bliss, and knowing that, one should pursue bliss within oneself, so it was said. For what reason was this said? The bliss and happiness that arise dependent on the five cords of sensual pleasure is called the bliss of sensual pleasure, a filthy, coarse, ignoble bliss. I say that this bliss should not be cultivated, should not be developed, should not be made much of, but should be feared. Here, a monk, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unbeneficial qualities, enters and abides in the first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana. This is called the bliss of renunciation, the bliss of seclusion, the bliss of peace, the bliss of enlightenment. I say that this bliss should be cultivated, should be developed, should be made much of, and should not be feared. Majjhima Nikaya 139.9 and Majjhima Nikaya 66.19-21. As I emphasized at the beginning, meaning does not inhere in a text. Still less can it be extracted and distilled into a definitive universal formula. Rather, it arises in response of the reader. Each reader will respond in their own way. This does not mean that textual analysis is irrelevant, since in some cases we can eliminate misleading readings. But in some cases, possible interpretations can be confirmed by experience. We should always remember that Dhamma does not stop short with the written word. What, Bhante, does abider in Dhamma refer to? Here a monk studies the Dhamma, the suttas, songs, expositions, verses, inspired sayings, so it was said sayings, birth stories, marvelous teachings, and catechisms. These are the nine angas into which the Buddhist texts were classified before the development of the Nikaya system. He does not waste his days with that Dhamma he has studied. He does not neglect retreat. He is devoted to samatha of the heart within. Thus, monk, a monk is an abider in Dhamma. Thus, monk, I have taught you, the monk who studies a lot, the one who teaches a lot, the one who recites a lot, the one who thinks a lot, and the one who abides in Dhamma. I have done for you what should be done by a teacher seeking the welfare of his disciples out of compassion. Here, monk, are the roots of trees. Here are empty huts. Practice jhana, monks. Do not be negligent. Do not regret it later. This is our instruction to you. Anguttara Nikaya 5.73. Dhamma is no weekend pastime. A crash course in meditation cannot be expected to affect any substantial, lasting transformation. If we want quick results, we're likely to end up either disappointed or deluded. But if we allow our lives to yield to the soft touch of the Dhamma, our minds will grow more and more peaceful as our attachments grow less and less. Samatha is not about trying very hard to scale some far-off mountain peak. It is about being content with wholesome happiness of the present moment. This is beyond no one's reach. We usually underestimate the task, but we underestimate our own potential even more. I thought of a time when my Sakyan father was working, and I was sitting in the shade of a rose apple tree, where, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unbeneficial qualities, I entered and abode in the first jhana, with initial and sustained application of mind, and the rapture and bliss born of seclusion. I thought, might that be the path to enlightenment? Then following up that memory, there came the awareness that indeed is the path to enlightenment. Majjhima Nikaya 36.31, Majjhima Nikaya 85, and Majjhima Nikaya 100. Appendix A, on the translations. In the interests of readability and concision, I have taken some liberties with condensing and paraphrasing the translations. and have divorced the chosen passages from their original contexts. On the other hand, I have treated doctrinal terms and passages with rigorous consistency, occasionally falling back on that last resort of the inept translator, word-for-word literalism. I have frequently relied on earlier translations, particularly the wonderful works of Bhikkhu Nyanamoli and Bhikkhu Bodhi, but the final choice of rendering is in all cases my own. I have retained the Pali terms for the crucial meditation terminology in all occurrences, with the exception of Satipatthana, which I have occasionally rendered as establishing a mindfulness. Otherwise, Pali has been retained only for a few words probably more familiar to Buddhists than their English equivalents: arahant, accomplished one; vinaya, discipline; sadhu, it is good; bhante, venerable sir; samsara, course of rebirths. I have generally dispensed with capitals for doctrinal terms as being justified neither by the Pali nor by current English, since words such as sutta, vinaya, and abhidhamma may have a less specialized meaning in early Pali. I capitalize only when unambiguously referring to actual texts. Following is an explanation of my approach to some of the technical terminology. Anusaya is the most fundamental level of the defilements, which, even if not presently active, will inevitably manifest when the conditions are ripe. Tendency, on the other hand, refers to a mere inclination. I have used inherent compulsion. Avakanti is usually rendered following the etymology as descent, but it seems more sensible to follow the unambiguous contextual meaning independent origination and elsewhere of reincarnation. The context should clarify that this refers to a conditioned stream of consciousness, not an eternal soul. Asava has been rendered poison rather than the feeble taint, which had been used for upakilesa. Upanisa has been derived by scholars from Upanisadatti, so the sub-commentary, or from Upanisaya, so the commentary. The former supports the rendering proximate condition, the latter vital condition. Virtue, the Upanisa for samadhi, is an often repeated idiomatic usage of the term, but the proximate condition for samadhi is not virtue, but bliss. Upanisa can substitute for paccaya as a general term for condition, but its most idiomatic usage is in the dependent liberation, and there it means primarily vital condition. We have met Upanisa with this meaning in the definition of right samadhi at Majjhima Nikaya 117.1, etc. At Anguttara Nikaya 9.1, good friendship, virtue, talk on wanting little, etc., energy and understanding are said to be upanisas for the development of the wings to enlightenment. Similarly, at Anguttara Nikaya 367, lending an ear to listen to Dhamma is an upanisa for direct knowledge, etc. They too are both necessary, Buddhas notwithstanding, the context is the training for disciples. And, as the passage emphasizes, strongly inducive but not proximate conditions. I therefore take this as being the basic meaning, applied with some flexibility in other contexts. Kaya usually means body, but in samadhi the five senses that make up the body have disappeared. The formless attainments, the deathless, the ultimate truth, Majjhima Nikaya 70.23, and cessation are said to be contacted with the kaya. This last also rules out the namakaya, mentality body. At Digha Nikaya 27.9, kaya is synonymous with bhuta, has become dhamma, become holy. In other expressions also, for example, the kaya witness, for example, Anguttara Nikaya 9.43, but see also Samyutta Nikaya 48.50, quoted above, and Samyutta Nikaya 48.53. Here, kaya emphasizes the directness of personal engagement. This meaning fits well in the samadhi contexts, so I have used person or personally. On the other hand, the kaya tranquility that occurs before samadhi is surely parallel with the stage of breath meditation consisting of tranquilizing the kaya activities. This is the in and out breaths, and so refers simply to the physical body. Kahaya is gentler than destruction, which is handled by other words in the Pali. It means drying up of a stream, using up of supplies, waning of the moon, etc. I have used evaporation. Dhamma has been left untranslated or rendered with principle, quality, phenomena, or teaching, rather than state, which is precisely what it is not. Bhikkhu Bodhi rather curiously asks us to accept the rendering state, divested of both its chief denotation, the existing condition of a person or thing, and connotation, staticity. This rendering reinforces the ontological concretization of the concept of Dhamma. Nipaka, adjective, or Nipaka, noun, appear most prominently as part of the compound Satinipaka in the definition of mindfulness as spiritual faculty, etc. The resemblance of this compound to Sati Sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension, may have influenced the commentaries to gloss Nipaka as understanding. But other contexts show a closer connection with the Sanskrit cognate meaning chief, master. You should abide with the doors of the sense faculties guarded, gutta, with mindfulness protected, arakkasati, with masterly mindfulness, nipakasati, endowed with protected mind, with heart protected by mindfulness, Anguttara Nikaya 5, 114. The meaning as mastery over the senses also applies in the sequence virtue, nipakka, satipatthana, at Majjhima Nikaya 51.3. Here too it means mastery. With constant virtue, masterly, nipakka, in jhana, whose mind is mastered, vasibhutta, one-pointed in samadhi, that wise one, scattering the darkness with threefold realization, is destroyer of death, Anguttara Nikaya 3.58. Nimitta in the suttas probably never means radiant reflex image in meditation. This was referred to rather as light and vision of forms, the radiant mind, etc. The commentarial usage of nimitta for this light is probably influenced by such passages as this. When, good sirs, the nimittas are seen, illumination is born, and light manifests, then Brahma will manifest. Digha Nikaya 19.15. At Anguttara Nikaya 5.193, the various pollutants and disturbances to water, compared with the five hindrances, prevent one from seeing the nimitta, reflection, of one's own face. The commentarial term apprehending sign, Uggaha Nimitta, was possibly derived from passages such as Anguttara Nikaya 6.68 and Samyutta Nikaya 47.8. But here the meaning seems to be apprehending the character of the mind, how the mind responds to various foods. Anguttara Nikaya 6.68 shows that apprehending the nimitta of the mind is a preliminary stage of meditation, before fulfilling right view and then right samadhi. In at least some meditation contexts, nimitta just means cause. For example, Samyutta Nikaya 48.40. It refers to some quality, aspect, or feature of experience which, when paid attention to, promotes the growth of a similar or related quality. This meaning fits in well with the context in this work, so I have adopted the rendering basis rather than sign, which does not carry a causal implication. Anguttara Nikaya 3.19 says that a monk who does not carefully resolve on their samadhi nimitta, here meditation subject, perhaps satipatthana, in the morning, midday, or evening, cannot grow in good qualities. At Majjhima Nikaya 128.28, the phrase "I pay attention to the light nimitta" occurs, but even here I would regard the term attention as hinting at a causal implication consistent with the usage in the sutta. Rupa refers to the physical world as it appears to the mind. It includes energy, the tejo dhatu, and is thus broader than matter or even materiality. The rendering physical form attempts to capture both the breadth and the subjectivity of rupa and retains the connection with rupa as the objects of sight, visible forms. Vitaka and vichara do not mean thinking in the context of jhana. Thinking involves a succession of different mental objects and therefore cannot apply to the still one-pointedness of jhana. Jhana is a state of altered consciousness, and it is only to be expected that psychological terms will take on new and more refined meanings. The following passage brings out this distinction. I understood thus. This thought, vitakka, of renunciation, non-ill will, non-cruelty, which has risen, does not lead to the affliction of myself, of others, or of both. It matures understanding, relieves stress, and leads to nibbana. But if I think on and consider on anuvitakka, anuvichara, for too long, my body will be strained. When the body is strained, the mind is stirred up, and a mind stirred up is far from samadhi. So I steadied, settled, unified, and concentrated my mind in samadhi within myself. For what reason? So that my mind would not be stirred up. My energy was roused and unflagging, my mindfulness established and unconfused, my body tranquil and relaxed. I entered an abode in the first jhana with initial and sustained application of mind. Vitakka Vichara. Majjhima Nikaya 19. Further, mindfulness of breathing is taught for cutting off thinking, vitakka. Udana 4.1. And at Majjhima Nikaya 20, 5 methods for quelling thoughts are taught. Both of these practices are for the development of the higher mind, i.e. jhana, including the jhana factor of initial application, vitakka. If this implicit distinction is embodied in the translation, there's no need for the underivable rendering of vitakka in such contexts as distracting thoughts. All thoughts, even thoughts about the Dhamma, must be abandoned for the mind to find peace. Anguttara Nikaya 3.100 and 5.73. Vosa karamanang karidva is interpreted by the commentaries as meaning taking nibbana as the object of the mind in samadhi. This is identified as the transcendental samadhi of the noble path moments and fruits. Apart from our general critique of the concept of the momentary path, there are several reasons to doubt such an interpretation. Normally, the Pali absolutive, here signified by having, expresses a subordinate action completed before the main action of the sentence. This is the regular verb form in phrases at the start of the jhana formula to signify the ending of the obstructions to jhana or the fulfillment of the qualities leading to jhana. For example, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, or having abandoned the 5 hindrances. The sentence idha bhikkhave arayasavakko vosagaramanang karitva sabhati samadhiṃ labhati cittasekagatanang is syntactically straightforward, so there is no reason to propose any non-standard interpretation. Compare the formula for the basis for psychic power. Chandlang che bhikkhave nisaya labhati samadhiṃ labhati cissa ekagatanang. The commentarial explanation, however, entails the simultaneous occurrence of the main action with the subordinate clause. This may just be grammatically possible. Almost any grammatical rule can admit some exceptions, but hardly likely. Bhikkhu Bodhi, perhaps influenced by the commentary, takes vosa gamaramanang karitva in opposition to samadhi, grammatically the patient of the sentence in accusative, rather than noble disciple, the agent in nominative. This is certainly unusual. Warder lists no such usage of the absolutive. The phrase may be compared with the passage on the development of the 6 recollections. Having made this the support, idang aramanang karitva, such beings here are purified, Anguttara Nikaya 6.26, as quoted above. Here, aramanang karitva is obviously in opposition to beings, the agent. This passage also gives a good idea as to the meaning of aramana as support or basis, the previously developed good qualities that underpin further development. A related usage occurs at Majjhima Nikaya 21.11. One develops loving-kindness toward one person, and then, relying on that, tadaramanang, toward all beings. In such contexts, the meaning approaches meditation subject. This meaning is probably intended in the late Jhana Samyutta. Samyutta Nikaya 34, 5. Incidentally, should not Gochara in Samyutta Nikaya 34, 6 mean Satipatthana, the meditator's native habitat? See Samyutta Nikaya 37, 6. From here, perhaps, developed the usage of Arammana as object of consciousness, dominant in the Abhidhamma but absent from the suttas, on which the commentaries rely to interpret Vosagaramanam Karikva. There are other difficulties with the commentarial explanation. The definitions of some of the other spiritual faculties, for example that of mindfulness as memory of what was said and done long ago, has nothing to do with any path moment. The commentaries therefore resort to a convoluted division of the spiritual faculties as transcendental, non-transcendental, and mixed. This directly contradicts the suttas that restrict the spiritual faculties to the noble individuals. Also, since transcendental samadhi occurs before non-transcendental understanding, it makes nonsense of any notion of progressive development. Sankhara has an active meaning in most of its occurrences, so I have reflected this by rendering it as activities rather than formations. This preserves the link with its etymological sibling, action, kamma, for which it often serves as a substitute. Sankharas as the second link of dependent origination and the fourth aggregate are defined as volition, chetana. However, particularly as the fourth aggregate, the Abhidhamma takes them to be broader than that, encompassing a wide range of mental phenomena, from basic functions like contact to sophisticated emotions like equanimity. While the rendering conceptual activities is too narrow for this, it is broader than volitional activities, and it emphasizes the conceptual linguistic functions that are most typical of this aggregate, as well as the pregnant causative aspect. Satchikaroti has been rendered by the literal witnessing, thus preserving the connection with personal witness, kayasakhi, and freeing up realization for vidya rather than the tautologous true knowledge, in turn enabling knowledge to be consistently reserved for words based on the root jnana. Appendix B, Contemporary Teachers on Samadhi. Write samadhi as the last link of the Eightfold Path as defined as the four meditative absorptions, jhanas, Bhikkhu Jnanatiloka, Buddhist Dictionary. The suttas themselves say nothing about a system of bare insight meditation, Bhikkhu Bodhi, the Connected Discourses of the Buddha. The Pali Pitaka explains right samadhi in terms of the four jhanas, Mahasi Sayadaw, a discourse on the Salaka Sutta. The Eightfold Path includes both right view and right samadhi. A person who is to gain right release has to develop all eight factors of the path. Otherwise, they won't be able to gain release. Pra Ajahn Mun, Buridatta, a heart released. Wisdom is the fruit of samatha, Pra Ajahn Cha Bodhinyana, a taste of freedom. According to the suttas, concentration of jhana strength is necessary for the manifestation of the path, Bhikkhu Jnanamoli, Path of Purification, the Suttimagga, Introduction Note 21. Wisdom and samadhi are a Dhamma pair which go together and cannot be separated. Pra Ajahn Mahabua Jnanasampanno, wisdom develops samadhi. The wisdom that can let go of defilement is a special wisdom, not ordinary wisdom. It needs samadhi as its basis if it's going to let go. Pra Ajahn Phuong Jyotiko, awareness itself. The wisdom of vipassana is not something that can be fashioned into being by arrangement. Instead, it arises from samadhi that has been mastered until it is good and solid. Pra Ajahn Tait, Buddho. If the mind goes running around without stopping, it doesn't really see suffering. It has to be still if it wants to see. Pra Ajahn Li Dhammadharo, the skill of release. The four jhanas are invariably included in the complete course of training laid down for disciples. They figure in the training as the discipline in higher consciousness, right concentration of the Noble Eightfold Path, and the faculty and power of concentration. Bhante Gudaratana. a critical analysis of the jhanas in Theravada Buddhist meditation. Appendix C, instant enlightenment. It all seems so easy. Sit worshipfully at the feet of an all-enlightened Buddha. Allow the rapture of devotion to suffuse one's mind and rely on the Buddha to know just the right time to implant the seed of awakening. No need to worry about meditation, renunciation, ethics. The idea of instant enlightenment has been used to justify a number of theses, past and present, all of which I feel distort the main orientation of the Buddha's teachings as recorded in the Nikayas and Agamas. For example, that jhana is not necessary for realizing the Dhamma, that the path in the ultimate sense is just a mind moment, that attainment of the Dhamma is only possible due to the direct personal instruction of a Buddha, or that in our degenerate times it is impossible to realize the Dhamma. The teachings on instant enlightenment as currently recorded in the Pali Canon do not provide substantial support for any of these views. Furthermore, there are many features of each episodes that suggest that many of them are later interpolations. 1. The texts that prominently feature in such episodes tend to be late. 2. The frequency of such episodes increases steadily with the passing of time. 3. Some of the events are intrinsically impossible. 4. They are usually just background stories, typically not attributed or confirmed by the Buddha. 5. Anyone can remember where a discourse was given and what was said, but few are able to reliably assess transcendental attainments. The comparative study of the Pali Suttas with texts of other traditions throws further doubt on these passages. Here are a few examples of the kinds of differences that we typically find in the accounts of attainment realized during a Dhamma talk. This is not a detailed study, just a few notes I have taken from Thich Nhat The Chinese Madhyamaka Agama and the Theravadin Majjhima Nikaya. Akankeya Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 6, Majjhima Agama 105. Majjhima Agama 105 ends with the monks going into seclusion, striving, and attaining arahantship. Majjhima Nikaya 6 says nothing of this. Vatupama Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 7, Majjhima Agama 93. At the end of Majjhima Nikaya 7, the Brahmin Sundarika Bharadvaja went for refuge, asked for ordination, and later, after striving, attained arahantship. In Majjhima Agama 93, he merely went for refuge and remained a lay follower. Upali Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 56, Majjhima Agama 133. In both versions, Upali, the wealthy supporter of the Jains, was converted by the Buddha, and in the same session while the Buddha taught him the gradual training, he attained the vision of the Dhamma. Magandhya Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 75, Majjhima Agama 153. In Majjhima Agama 153, Magandhya, a wanderer of another sect, was initially critical of the Buddha, was converted by him, experienced the vision of the Dhamma, went forth, and after striving attained arahantship. Majjhima Nikaya 75 omits the arising of the vision of Dhamma, but the other main elements are similar. Vekanasa Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 80, Majjhima Agama 209. Majjhima Nikaya 209 is similar to Majjhima Agama 153 above. Vekanasa was initially critical of the Buddha, converted by him, experienced the vision of the Dhamma, went forth, and after striving attained arahantship. However, Majjhima Nikaya 80 simply reports that Vekanasa went for refuge as a lay follower. Ratapala Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 82, Majjhima Agama 132. In both versions, Ratapala goes forth, strives, and attains arahantship. The Potaliya Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 54, Majjhima Agama 203. In Majjhima Agama 203, the householder Potaliya attains the vision of the Dhamma during the discourse, then went for refuge as a lay devotee. Majjhima Nikaya omits the arising of the vision of the Dhamma and is content to have Potaliya go for refuge. Brahmayu Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 91, Majjhima Agama 161. Both suttas agree that Brahmayu, a learned and venerable Brahmin, attained the vision of the Dhamma during the discourse, died soon afterward, and the Buddha declared that he had become a non-returner. The Chinese betrays its sloppy editing here by having Romayu rejoice in the closing statement of the Buddha, even though he's already dead. Bakula Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 124, Majjhima Agama 34. Bakula Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 124, Majjhima Agama 34. Achala Kassapa asks his former friend, Venerable Bakula, a rather personal question, and receives in reply an account of Venerable Bakula's high attainments and rigorous asceticism. In Majjhima Nikaya 124, he asks for the going forth, strives, and attains arahantship. Majjhima Agama 34 omits these details. This suggests that the Theravada may have emphasized a more ascetic, solitary mode of practice than did the Sarvastivada. Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 140, Majjhima Agama 162. In Majjhima Agama 162, Pukkusati is said to have attained the vision of the Dhamma during the discourse. However, Majjhima Nikaya 140 omits this, saying that after hearing the discourse and asking for the going forth, Pukkusati was killed by a cow, and the Buddha declared that he was a non-returner. The Theravada commentary, however, also says that Pukkusati attained the vision of the Dhamma during the discourse, thus agreeing with the Sarvastivada version. This agreement might be held to suggest that this was an early tradition passed down in the Theravada community, but for some reason not included in the canonical account. On the other hand, bearing in mind that the commentary has greatly elaborated the background story to this sutta, this may simply be one of a number of stock details that are commonly inserted into the stories of the great disciples. Chachaka Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 148, Majjhima Agama 86. Majjhima Nikaya 148 claims that 60 monks became arahants while listening to this discourse. Majjhima Agama 86 is silent. The Theravada commentary further exaggerates the episode of instant enlightenment at subsequent preachings of this discourse, confirming the impression that the Theravadins were anxious to exalt this proto-Abhidhamma-style analysis. Thus, of all the statements concerning the attainments of particular individuals, three are the same, Upali, Ratapala, and Brahmayu, while the remaining eight are different. Of those, if we focus on the statements that refer specifically to attainment while listening to a discourse, two are the same, Upali and Brahmayu, while five are different, Potaliya, Magandiya, Vekhanasa, Dhatu Vibhanga, Chachaka. This correlation of around 30% should be compared with the near identity of key doctrines, such as the Four Noble Truths, the Noble Eightfold Path, and Dependent Origination. Even a trivial detail, such as the settings of the suttas, show around 80% correlation. Also note that only two discourses that agree in attributing the vision of the Dhamma to a new disciple while listening to a discourse are two of the most obvious propaganda vehicles in the whole canon. The Upali Sutta was delivered to a wealthy chief disciple of the Jains, and we need not be surprised to find this story of the last days of the Jain teacher Mahavira, as recorded by the Buddhists, does not agree with the accounts in the Jain literature. The Brahmaya Sutta was delivered to one of the most revered elders of the Brahmins. Bearing this in mind, together with the considerations I advanced at the start of this essay, I conclude that the historical reliability of the records of attainments at the Majjhimas approximates to zero. This does not mean that such events cannot happen. The mind is a strange and wonderful place. But we should be exceedingly cautious before drawing any inferences about the Dhamma based on the assumptions that any particular incidents of instant enlightenment are literal historical fact. This has been A Swift Pair of Messengers by Bhikkhu Sujato, read by Justin Merritt.